This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow.
The most spectacular science shocker ever filmed. Too real to be science fiction. Now, science fact.
Ah, yes. It's time for our Science Goes to the Movies series, where we ask experts to dig into the science behind a new flick. And this week, it's Wally Pfister's AI thriller Transcendence. Did you see that one? You know, now if Terminator, The Matrix, and 2001 A Space Odyssey taught us anything, right, it's that super intelligent machines are bad news for humans. HAL 9000 seems like a nice guy until he won't open the pod bay doors. Hal. Transcendence is another AI run amok, but this one has a twist. Instead of creating a new intelligence, the scientists in Transcendence are uploading a brain, Johnny Depp's brain, to a supercomputer. Depp plays Will Caster, a brilliant AI researcher who's poisoned by anti-technology terrorists. He's dying. But his wife, Evelyn Caster, has a plan to save him. She uploads her hubby's brain to the internet. What would it really take to upload a mind? And if we could do it, would it be conscious? That's what our panel of experts, our scientists, film critics, that's what we're going to be talking about. Let me introduce them. Stuart Russell is a professor of computer science and engineering at Berkeley and co-author of the book Artificial Intelligence, A Modern Approach. He joins us from the Loire Valley in France. Welcome to Science
Hi,
Friday.
Thank you.
Christoph Koch is Chief Scientific Officer at the Allen Institute for Brain Science. He joins us from Seattle. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you for having me.
Let me ask both of you. Stuart, have you seen Transcendence?
Yes, I have. I was passing through Boston for one day, and I got to see it that night because it's not playing in France yet.
Not yet. Christoph, have you?
Yeah, I also got the script early on. I met with Walter Pfister and we talked about some of the concepts, and I saw an early version of the script, and then I saw the movie last week.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask our callers, our listeners, to call in 844-724-8255 is our number if you've seen Transcendence, 844-SCI-TALK. And remember... Yeah, that's it. That's our spoiler alert. So if you don't want to know what's going on in the movie or how it turns out, go see the movie, then play the podcast back a little later because we're going to talk about the movie. We're going to talk about the end of the movie. So consider that as your warning. Let's get in there and talk about the movie. Christoph, what do you think? You read the early version. What feedback did the filmmakers want from you when they gave you that early version?
Well, they wanted to know how realistic did it feel. They were less concerned with the science and more did it feel, do scientists act or talk in the manner portrayed in the movie?
And your answer was?
Well, the most realistic scientist is Max, you know, played by Paul Bettany, who's supposed to be the neuroscientist who builds enabling technology to enable Johnny Depp's brain to be uploaded into the internet. And he also very early on voices some criticism, right? He says, is this really Will? Is this really good what Evelyn is doing?
Mm-hmm. And Christoph, as a brain scientist, how did the filmmakers do? Did you like that part of the movie about the brain? And did they get it right? Or what are you thinking?
Well, you mean apart from the fact that she does brain surgery under non-sterile conditions in a gym?
details.
I know, all details. I mean, there are really two sort of intellectual issues that this film tries to grapple with.
Right.
One is, is it at all possible to deconstruct a brain and to reconstruct it in a computer? And then B, will this entity, this now simulated entity, ever be conscious? And those are two different ideas. And people have discussed them within sciences. There's been books published on both of them.
Mm-hmm. And Stuart, you wrote a review for the Huffington Post titled, An AI Researcher Enjoys Watching His Own Execution.
Well, I'm an AI professor at Berkeley, and the movie starts with an AI professor at Berkeley being assassinated. So that part was a little bit uncomfortable.
Did it look like you? Was it a realistic portrayal of what you did?
Johnny Depp and me, yeah, we're except for the lack of hair and a few other things, I think we're very close. So I think actually I'm kind of halfway between Johnny Depp and Max Waters in what I think. Johnny Depp is obviously very, very unworldly. His wife has to sort of help him remember where his things are, and he's always off in his mental world.
Right.
And he just wants to solve the problem of creating an intelligent machine.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife is the business side of the partnership, and she's the one raising the money. And Max is the one sort of saying, you know, perhaps we should be careful and hold on, and what exactly are we doing?
Hmm. And so did you enjoy the movie, though?
I did, yes. I think, like Christoph, I found the brain upload part is maybe the most difficult part to swallow. But I would say there's a third aspect besides the brain upload and whether or not the machine would be conscious. There's this notion of what they call the intelligence explosion. In the movie, it's called the transcendence, where once you have a machine that's intelligent enough to improve its own software and hardware, then there's sort of no limit to how smart it can become. It can add as much hardware as it wants. It can reprogram itself with much better algorithms, and then it rapidly goes far beyond human comprehension and human abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, you could almost say that Johnny Depp is now embodied in the computer, and you could say he becomes a Christ figure because he's healing the sick, he's raising the dead, and he's crucified by the rest of the human race.
Mm. Is the idea of actually doing a brain upload, is that just totally out of the question?
At this point, yes. Because we don't even know at what point we need to reconstruct the brain. Is it at the molecular level? So we believe today that your memory of your first kiss is encoded in the contact points among nerve cells. That those are called synapses, and you have on the order of a quadrillion of them. And we don't even know whether you need to reconstruct every single molecule within one of those synapses. There are probably 1,000 different species of proteins and probably 1 billion copies of them. And so if you needed to do that, then we're just, you know, almost infinitely far removed from that practical possibility.
Mm-hmm.
We can't even do it right now with a single worm. The simplest animals that we've analyzed is a round worm that has 302 nerve cells. And we haven't even been able to do it for this creature.
Mm-hmm. Number 844-724-8255 is if you'd like to talk about the movie. We're going to play a little clip to give you a flavor of what we're talking about. And this is where Evelyn Castor, that's the wife of the scientist, is talking to Max Waters. We talked about Max. He's a companion. And she is explaining how they could upload Will's brain.
Look, it's all built off of Casey's solution to the self-awareness problem. He did it 6 months ago.
He did what exactly?
Instead of creating an artificial intelligence, he duplicated an existing one.
Tell me you're joking.
He recorded the monkey's brain activity and uploaded its consciousness like a song or a movie.
You're out of your mind.
Will's body is dying, but his mind is a pattern of electrical signals that we can upload into pen. He can...
Not a monkey! Assuming that implanting an electrode into his brain doesn't actually kill him and that this works, at the very best, you'll be making a digital approximation of him. If we missed anything, a thought, a childhood memory, how will you know what you're dealing with?
Yeah, and that was actually the movie, I think. You know, I wasn't crazy about the movie because I think it goes off the deep end toward the second half where they get into nanotechnology and things like that. But it got you to think about the idea, didn't it, Stuart and Christoph? Got you to think about the future and think about where you think this might be headed?
Yep.
So
I think many people in the field think about the future. Most people are like the casters. They are just trying to solve the problem. They want to make machines intelligent. They're working on the next puzzle. But there are a number of people who think about what will happen when we succeed.
Mm.
So I actually have a chapter in my book called What If We Succeed? And if we make machines that are much smarter than human beings, and this is what happens after Will Castor is uploaded and he has the massive computational resources to run his brain with, he becomes much more intelligent than humans. So if that happens, then it's very difficult to predict what such a system would do and how to control it. And it's a bit like the old stories of the genie in the lamp or the sorcerer's apprentice. You can give your three wishes, but in all those stories, you know, the three wishes backfire, and there's always some loophole.
Right.
And the genie carries out what you ask to the utmost extent, and it's never what you really wanted. So the same is going to be true with machines. If we ask them, you know, heal the sick, end human suffering, well, perhaps the best way to end human suffering is to end human life altogether, because then there won't be any more human suffering. That would be a pretty big loophole.
Yeah.
But you can imagine how hard is it to write tax law so there are no loopholes. We haven't succeeded after 300 years of trying. And it's very difficult to say what we would want a superintelligent machine to do so that we can be absolutely sure that the outcome is what we really want as opposed to what we say. And that's the issue. So I think we, as a field, are changing. We're going through a process of realization that more intelligent is not necessarily better. We have to be more intelligent and controlled and safe. Just like the nuclear physicists, when they figured out chain reactions, they suddenly realized, oh, if we make too much of a chain reaction, then we have a nuclear explosion. So we need controlled chain reactions, just like we need controlled artificial intelligence.
Isn't that true of all of science? The history of science, whether we're talking about genetic engineering in its early days, worrying about what's going to crawl out of the lab once we start playing around with the genome?
The difference now is that this is risk being an existentialist threat to human society, just like with once the nuclear genie was out of the bottle. We still live under the possibility within 20 minutes that all people we know will be obliterated under a nuclear mushroom. But now we live with the possibility that over the next 50, 100 years, this invention that we are working on might be our final invention, as Stuart has emphasized, and that our future may be bleaker than we think.
Let me have you compare this to another movie. Our last movie, Science Goes to the Movies pick, was also about AI, and that was Spike Jonze's Her. It was sort of about Siri growing on steroids, you know, about getting a companion, a computer companion. Do you think that was any closer to reality than this one was? Did either of you see that one?
Yeah, I saw it and I wrote a review about it. I think it's a much more realistic depiction of where things are likely to be in 20 or 30 years once we have better language understanding that really does deep language understanding and not just automatic machine translation. And I think it depicts a scenario that's quite realistic where our phones, our advanced steroids, as you mentioned, Ira, are so powerful that we'll develop relationship with them. And there's no question people will develop emotional, very fraught relationships with them. The interesting question from a philosophical or scientific point of view, will it feel like anything? So the female character portrayed there was called Samantha. And at one point she asked, you know, do I really love? Are these feelings real? And that depends what you think about consciousness and can machines ever be truly conscious in the way people and animals are.
Mm-hmm. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International, talking about the movie Transcendence with my guests Stuart Russell and Christoph Koch. Stuart, the idea of uploading something to the brain, is that even just possible? How was that done in the movie? And is that sort of a realistic way it could be? Not that it might not be functional, but technically speaking.
So first of all, I think it's essential to the plot. If they just created some artificial intelligence that wasn't her husband, it would lose a lot of the romantic tension. Let's put it that way. So I think they had no choice but to have that aspect in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Christoph said it right. The brain is incredibly complex, and you know they attach probably 25 electrodes to his scalp, and they drill into his brain a bit.
In the gym.
It's not just the electrical activity of the brain. It's the actual structure of the brain, the billions of neurons and the trillions of synapses and their connections and their details. So there is a scientific approach called whole brain emulation, which which involves taking some brain tissue and vitrifying it so that you can slice it into extremely thin slices, and then you trace all the connections using microscopes. And you try to rebuild inside the computer a map of every single neuron and how they're all connected together. And as Christoph said, we've tried to do this for the worm, which has 302 neurons, and we've built the map, but it still doesn't behave like the worm, and it doesn't behave anything like the worm. And we don't understand what's missing in our models and our simulations. And that takes months or years of work. And for the human brain, you know, at that rate, it would take millennia to collect all that information.
Yeah.
So perhaps that could be done faster, but we are still a very, very long way from understanding what it is. And so if we did build such a thing and we had it running in a computer with a simulation, we still don't know, would such a machine be conscious? Presumably, if our analysis is correct, then it will behave the same way as the original human. But we don't know if it will be conscious.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment, I think our level of scientific and philosophical understanding is completely incapable of answering that question. So I just wanted to make one point that even though uploading a brain is very difficult, extending a brain might not be. And there's a field called brain-machine interfacing, whose goal is to help people who are completely paralyzed to be able to communicate and move things in the real world using just their brains.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found is that we don't have to understand exactly how the brain works in order for this to happen, because the brain basically figures it out by itself. The hardware of the brain is incredibly flexible, and if you connect up a set of electrodes to some neurons, and any brain activity on those neurons has some effect which can be perceived through the eyes of the owner of the brain, then somehow the brain figures out how to adjust the activity of those neurons to get the effect that it wants in the real world. So it's not like we're born with a piece of our brain that can directly move a cursor on a screen, because, you know,
yeah.
In evolutionary
yeah.
history, there yeah. were no cursors on the screen.
Yeah. Yeah,
but nonetheless,
they
if
can
you
still
do that,
do
you can get the brain to control the cursor on the screen. So you could imagine extending the brain with large amounts of memory.
I've got to interrupt that because we've got to take a break, but we'll come back and talk lots more about this. So please stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. You're listening to our series, Science Goes to the Movies. And this hour, our scientist film critics are taking on Transcendence. That is the new Hollywood thriller about AI gone wrong. When does it not go wrong in Hollywood? We're talking with Stuart Russell, professor of computer science and engineering at Berkeley, co-author of the book Artificial Intelligence, A Modern Approach, and Christoph Koch, chief scientific officer at the Allen Institute for Brain Science. And we were talking, before I rudely interrupted everybody, about the whole idea behind consciousness and getting to consciousness as the goal in artificial intelligence. And I think in the movie, and correct me if I'm wrong, Stuart, they read, this is called self-awareness. Is that what they used instead of the word consciousness?
Self-consciousness, yes.
And they asked Johnny Depp's image whether he was self-aware, and he throws the question back at them saying, you know, are you? You know, how could you prove it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a dilemma that's a dilemma of consciousness, that I never directly know whether you're conscious, right? All I can rely on you telling me that you're conscious. And I don't even know what you're conscious of, right? And that's a dilemma of a spy or somebody who has an affair, that you think the person feels one thing, but in fact they have very different feelings. Or if it's a zombie, they have no feeling whatsoever. And it's not easy from the outside to infer whether they have feelings at all. And so this will also be the case with computers. They may have, we can surely in the future, like in the movie Her, Samantha, we can program entities that they behave like if they have conscious feelings, and they say they have conscious feelings of love or trust or anger, But how do we really know? For that, we need a theory of consciousness, and there is no agreed-upon theory of consciousness right now that we have.
Stuart, are we going to ever agree on something like that? Is there going to be a conscious machine?
So, two things. One is, no one I know seriously in AI is trying to build a conscious machine, because we simply don't know how. And I often say, you know, if someone gave me $1 trillion to do it, I would just give it back.
You anticipated my next question. But I'll take the trillion if you want to throw it back. Why is that? No one is trying to build a machine. They realize it's too difficult because we as humans can't create. We have to be outside the box to build the box.
It's because we have really absolutely no idea what consciousness is. I mean, obviously, we are conscious, but there's no scientific understanding. We believe that the brain operates on ordinary physical principles and molecules moving and electrical charges and so on, but we can't explain why is it that certain electrical charges and certain chemical movements constitute consciousness, whereas other electrical charges, I mean, we don't think about our electric light bulbs being conscious even though they have electrical movements. So no one has even the first idea where to begin with that question.
Stuart, I'm sorry, I have to disagree with you. I mean, there is a field of the science of consciousness now. There are a number of theories about consciousness that precisely try to answer the question that you have posed. What does it take for a system like a brain or like a computer or like my stomach or like a dog to be conscious? It is true that they're not agreed upon answers, but there are certainly scientists now. And this is a big difference over 100 years, where before it was only philosophers that used to worry about consciousness. Now there are scientists, neuroscientists, some computer scientists, some physicists who do worry and who do ask the question, what does it take for a physical system like our brain to be conscious? And under what circumstances can we recreate these subjective feelings? It feels like something to be me. This is what's known as self-consciousness. To what extent can other physical systems like computer do have these feelings of self-consciousness or self-awareness, as in the movie?
Yes, I agree that there are lots of scientists as well as philosophers who wonder about it. But I think the nature of our scientific theories is not of the kind that can explain it. I think the best we can do is to say, well, it seems to be that when such and such happens, people have a conscious experience, and when such and such doesn't happen, they don't have a conscious experience. So we might, for example, get very precise abilities to measure brain activity. The moment we have extremely crude and very slow and coarse measurements through fMRI and other devices, perhaps we'll be able to get better at decoding the brain activity and perhaps even spotting when there's some correlation between a detailed piece of brain activity and some conscious experience that perhaps someone can talk about or record. But all we would have then is a correlation. We still wouldn't understand what is it that makes that a conscious experience, because, you know, do we think that if we made some neurons in the lab and stimulated them at one end, and the signal came to the other end, do we think that we would have somehow created some consciousness in that?
Yes, if the brain is complex enough, that I believe that would be the case.
And let me move on, because we have a few more minutes left to talk about it. But I wanted to talk about this is very thought-provoking, even though it's a science fiction movie and it runs away with itself a little bit toward the end. Do scientists have responsibilities to think about now the consequences of AI, and are researchers organizing, talking, meeting about these things?
Yes, absolutely, yes. there's a responsibility because if you're working on a field whose success would probably be the biggest event in human history, and if some people predict the last event in human history, then you better take responsibility. And people are having meetings. In fact, I just organized one on Tuesday in Paris, taking advantage of a major conference that was here. And what I'm finding is that senior people in the field who have never publicly evinced any concern before are privately thinking that we do need to take this issue very seriously, and the sooner we take it seriously, the better. I think the nuclear physicists wish they had taken it seriously much earlier than they did.
Christoph?
Yes, I fully have to agree, Stuart. I recently attended a meeting of physicists, and we had a large discussion in a poll about what are the biggest existentialist threat. To my surprise, after nuclear war, it was the Grey Goose scenario or the AI run amok scenario. It wasn't climate control or some of the other more conventional ones. So there is a lot of concern among some experts what will happen to, runaway AI.
Is it the singularity idea?
It vaguely relates to that. Yes, yeah. The idea that these AI will network themselves and that will escape sort of some sort of human control by redesigning themselves.
Yeah, that is sort of touched on in the movie In Transcendence about the computers getting much smarter than the people, and they lose control, and now they're the slaves.
I mean, there is no law in the universe that says, things are limited to human-level intelligence, right? So there may well be entities that are going to be much smarter than us. And as Stuart says, we have no way to predict what will be their desires, what will be their motivations. And programming it in, we all know how buggy software it is. And do we really want to rely on sort of standard programmers to program in something that will not wipe us out in one way or another?
All right. Chilling thought, something to think about. Would you recommend people go see the movie? Just as our last movie critics, yeah, go for it.
Yes, I would, because it is thought-provoking in that manner.
And there's the last word from Stuart Russell and Christoph Koch. Stuart is professor of computer science and engineering at Berkeley, author of Artificial Intelligence, A Modern Approach. Christoph Koch is chief scientific officer at the Allen Institute for Brain Science in Seattle. Welcome to the show, and thanks for coming on.